KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. The HBO Max series Hacks showcases Jean Smart as a veteran comedian who gets paired up with a much younger writer in an effort to update her material so she can hold on to her long-running stage show in Las Vegas. In real life, Smart also wanted the show to go on, even when her husband died unexpectedly with a week of shooting left. The showrunners were prepared to shut down indefinitely, but she insisted that the cameras keep rolling.
The woman wanted to do all her own stunts. She wanted to jump on the helicopter. We knew from working with her that she is all in. She is fully committed. And so in that way, we kind of looked to her in this time as well.
Paul W. Downs and Jen Statsky, who created the series along with Lucia Aniello, tells us about pitching Hacks to HBO Max before the streamer even had a name. Now Hacks is up for 15 Emmy nominations, including Outstanding Comedy Series. But first, we banter. Stay tuned. It's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my colleague in banter, Matt Bellany. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So this is a week of talking about the various news divisions of the various networks. Let's start with MSNBC, the Rachel Maddow show. Rachel Maddow put it out there that she was thinking, maybe I don't want to do this so much anymore. Maybe I'm going to leave and start my own thing. And that gave her the opportunity to negotiate a staggering deal. And she's still, in a year from now, not going to be doing her show every night of the week. So they paid her a ton of money, which we will talk about, for a changed array of services. Meanwhile, there is a scandal at ABC News, which we will also talk about. But let's start with Maddow.
Yeah, the Daily Beast reported that this was a $30 million deal, and they characterized it as more money to do less work. And I'm not sure that's the case. You know, Rachel Maddow is obviously the face of that network. Her show alone generates about $66 million in revenue a year. The network absolutely could not afford to lose her. So she hires Ari Emanuel, and lo and behold, she's got a new deal. I have heard that it is actually potentially worth more than $30 million because she's essentially being treated more like Hollywood talent, where she has an overall deal. And yes, she's going to transition from a daily show to a weekly show, but she's also going to host specials and develop new shows and appear on other aspects of the network programming. So it's really more of an overall relationship, and she'll benefit if she can create more programming for them.
Yeah, and across, I think, multiple platforms, as someone there said, told CNN, she is our Oprah. So clearly they want to keep her in the fold. Now, Brian Williams is making noises that he doesn't want to stay at his hour. We don't know whether that's another negotiating ploy or whether he really doesn't want to, but he's certainly put in his time with the 11th hour, and they could have a whole change in lineup, which they certainly would not want.
Yeah, one thing that's interesting is as these cable networks transition to digital, they're really trying to maintain these carriage fees that they get, and they're trying to continue with these anchor franchises, whether it's a person like Maddow on MSNBC or something like The Real Housewives on Bravo, or, you know, AMC with The Walking Dead. They know that there's going to be a point very soon where there's pressure on these carriage fees that the cable providers have been paying and that have been increasing so much over the past few years. And they just need these franchise things that no cable provider can get rid of the network or ask to pay less.
Yeah, I mean, I will acknowledge that I like to watch some of the shows on MSNBC, and that is like the one thing I can't figure out where to get someplace else, and the one thing that keeps me locked into my cable bundle. So it's working.
It's working, and don't be surprised if you also see Rachel Maddow on Peacock, because I think as part of this deal, she can also do programming that will live across the streaming world, so she can, you know, anchor that existing network, but also help them build for the future.
Yeah, I mean, she's certainly energetic and has done a lot of things. She did the Bagman series about the Agnew administration that won a Peabody Award when I was on that jury. And she wrote a book. I mean, she does a lot. She's got a lot of energy, and she now will have more places to put that energy. Meanwhile, ABC News, wow, that is a bad situation. There was a lawsuit filed very recently against a producer, Michael Korn, a claim that he had sexually assaulted a current news staffer, ABC News staffer, and a former staffer in separate incidents. The second staffer is not part of the lawsuit, but is supporting the lawsuit, so is supporting these allegations. And ABC, it's very far from clear what they knew and when they knew it about the allegations against this guy. He's not there anymore, but that almost makes things look like maybe they really did know. ABC News President Kim Godwin had a conference call with staffers in the past few days where she said that she has requested an independent investigation into the way the network handled allegations of sexual assault. This is from the former executive producer. This is who Michael Korn was, saying we cannot have us investigating us. The process has to be independent. I'll say that is absolutely the right call.
Yeah, and it's something that I think is becoming more common in these cases. We saw it at NBC in the Matt Lauer situation, and there were some issues with that one where some people said it wasn't exactly independent. But I think that's obviously the right call in these situations. It's important to these networks. I mean, the culture at ABC News had been known to be very poor for many years. They've ousted several executives there. The Booker, the head of the news division, stepped down. So, you know, this is the new world order. I mean, some of this behavior that was tolerated in past years is just not being tolerated. So we'll see how if this lawsuit is quickly settled, or if it actually reveals some of the internal back and forth there.
But we should also note that several ABC officials apparently learned of these allegations in 2017, including an attorney at the company, a publicist, a business exec. So that is not exactly a great look. The investigation into his conduct was launched when there were formal complaints filed with the company in February of this year. But now there's going to potentially be an independent review, which just absolutely seems necessary in these cases.
Yeah, the outcome here will be interesting. I mean, obviously, the network has an incentive to settle. These things don't typically make it to trial. But this executive, Michael Korn, I mean, this is his reputation. We'll see what ends up happening with him.
Yeah, I mean, I'll note that when we reported on an executive at NBC, it wasn't a sexual misconduct allegation, but NBC did come out with some results, not a detailed results, but saying that the conduct had been unacceptable that we'd reported on and the executive was fired. So we'll see if ABC does some kind of coming clean report. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, a founding partner of Puck News and author of a newsletter called What I'm Hearing. Hacks on HBO Max, one of the buzziest comedies of the summer, follows two women, a boomer and a zoomer. Deborah Vance, played by Jean Smart, is a faded icon, kind of a cross between Joan Rivers and Debbie Reynolds. A workaholic stand-up, she is a one-woman comedy empire centered around her long-running show at a Vegas casino.
Now, I also have a lot of gay fans. Oh, and some of them clearly couldn't get tickets to Magic Mike Live tonight. I also have a lot of gay enemies, or as I like to call them, my exes.
Smart's character is fabulously wealthy, but she still resists fiercely when the casino plans to cut her show in favor of a younger, fresher act. That's where Ava, played by Hannah Einbeiner, comes into the picture. Ava is a 20-something writer who's become a pariah in LA after one of her tweets went viral for the wrong reasons. She begs her manager, Jimmy, for a job, any job, and Jimmy, who's also Deborah's manager, sees an opportunity to pair them up.
She's one of the biggest earners at this company. And you just said you need to work.
I do, but come on. I'm not going to go write knock-knock jokes about how men don't put the toilet seat down. I'm not that desperate.
Respectfully, as your manager, right now you are that desperate.
Jimmy is played by Paul W. Downs, one of the three creators of Hacks, along with Lucia Aniello and Jen Statsky. All three became friends through comedy circles and all worked on the Comedy Central series Broad City. Downs and Statsky are our guests today. Statsky says they came up with the concept for Hacks several years ago.
We had this idea and then we got pulled in different directions. We were all working on different things, but this idea just like stuck around. We kept thinking about it. We kept emailing each other. You know, every time we were hanging out, it would kind of bubble up. And there are so many ideas that you kind of like struggle to make happen. You're like, no, this is stupid. I don't know. And you have to like really grind your way through it. But this felt really just special and different, at least I'll speak for myself, for me, because it never felt like a grind. Like we were like, well, we want to watch this show. This is a show I would love to watch. And so that's kind of what led us to be like, well, then I guess we got to make it. So it doesn't happen often, because certainly I've had those ideas where it doesn't come easily. But this one, I don't know, it just stuck around in our brains.
Yeah, it makes me think of that Larry David notebook in Curb Your Enthusiasm, where he loses the notebook with all the ideas. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when I saw that, I thought, you know, it takes a certain, I don't know what quality, to write those ideas down and hold on to them and ultimately make them, some of them, into a thing. So, yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? I would have said to Larry, it's okay. The ones you remember are the good ones. Don't worry about it. If they keep coming back to you when you're hanging out with your friends and bubbling up, that's the one you got to make.
So, Paul, you are engaged or cohabitating and with the with the third co-creator of this
yes,
show.
Yes, living in sin. You can say it. It's okay.
So, Jen, you are in this setting working with a couple. We've had couples on the show intermittently. Like, what is it like to work together as a couple? But I want to ask you what it's like to work with a couple.
You know, it's funny. It's probably like I think our threesome relationship is very specific and unique to us, because we are working like collaborators, but we're also in, you know, best friends, and like we hang out socially all the time too. So I am like very entwined and familiar with the ways Paul and Lucia communicate. So for me, it always feels very like natural that I'm part of being there. But you know, three people is kind of like, people are always like, that must be so hard. Three showrunners, like that's crazy. But in reality, like it kind of is great, because it's like two people can argue about an idea and then you're kind of at a stalemate. But with three, you've always got an automatic tiebreaker. So that's kind of like a really nice, easy way for things to get worked out creatively.
Is there a particular person who is always the tiebreaker?
There's not really one person who breaks the tie. It's bizarre that it's so evenly distributed. We sort of trade off in that regard. And sometimes the three of us are absolutely in sync. And I would say that's the thing that happens most often, is that the three of us really agree on something. And then we know for sure it's right. But yeah, I think it's been, like Jen said, when people ask if it, you know, is complicated or more time consuming, we find it to be really liberating. And because, like Jen said, we are, the three of us, very enmeshed as friends and creative collaborators, it really makes it a pleasure.
Yeah, sounds kind of fun. I don't know. So Jen, I have a feeling this is a story you get asked about all the time. Like, you basically kind of tweet your way into a job.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. So, you know, back in 2010, 2011, when Twitter was less of a, let's call it a hellscape, that, you know, people were on Twitter just kind of writing stupid jokes. And it was this interesting thing where Twitter, for comedy anyway, kind of a little bit made it feel like a more based on merit, because it was just like, oh, anyone could tweet a joke. And if it's really funny, and then it got the attention of a couple people and got a lot of retweets and et cetera, et cetera. We all know how Twitter works. Like, it would get seen by a lot of people. And then people would be like, oh, wow, this person's really funny. Who is this? And so, you know, I had graduated college and I was working as an assistant and I was trying to figure out what my path would be in comedy. I signed up for Twitter and I was like, oh, I like writing like dumb little one-liner jokes. That comes really naturally to me and it's fun and I'll just do it. And I wasn't like thinking about it. And then, you know, head writers on shows were really kind of looking at Twitter as another avenue to just discover new voices. And so even though I had submitted a packet many times to many a late night show and got rejected, it was only when I started, I guess, tweeting more and getting a little bit of attention on there that A.D. Miles, the head writer at Late Night with Jimmy Fallon, messaged me and said, hey, do you want to submit for our show? And then I ended up getting hired after I submitted a packet from that request. So very kind of weird path into things, yes. But Twitter was, for better or worse, very important for me.
I wonder whether Twitter can still serve that function for anybody or if it's just become too loud and noisy and huge.
Yeah, that's a really good... I've kind of talked to people about that. I do think it's a little bit loud and noisy. And there was a very brief moment in time where it was kind of like a pipeline that way, that it was like a really easy way... Not easy, it was never easy, but like it was a new way to get jobs or to get noticed. And I don't think that in 2021 it quite is the same. Maybe it is, I'm not sure.
I think that was true of YouTube as well. You know, when Lucia and I were making videos, sketch comedy videos, there was a moment when people would share them and they would go viral and you would get noticed and a lot of views. And I feel like today that's a little different. I mean, obviously YouTube still exists and people still do that. But I do feel like now it feels like on Instagram, a lot of alt comedians are getting their voice out there. So it's interesting the way in which all this has really changed.
Yeah, it's some constantly morphing digital world. So I'm getting to this, I'm moving along to this road trip. There's a road trip where you guys are going to Maine. Are all of you going to Maine? You're all going to Maine for a reason.
Yes, we all went. We actually all went in Jen's dad's car. we met in Boston. There was a Monster Jam, Monster Truck rally. And I have a character you absolutely know. I don't need to tell you. Named Jasper Cooch, whose catchphrase is, big trucks. And that's it. And so I went to the Monster Jam truck rally and was allowed to get on the microphone and truly do a call and response chant, which was, when I say big, you say trucks. Anyway, we were on the way to shoot this.
This is a young boy's dream come true, I'm sure, but go on.
100%. It was an incredible experience, a highlight in my career. And, you know, in going, I said to Jen and Lucia, the two funniest people I know who always make me funnier, will you please come and pitch jokes and help me out? And so they came along on this trip, and it was on that road trip that we started talking about some of our favorite stand-ups who also happen to be women, and how a lot of them, you know, didn't get the same acclaim or attention that a lot of their male contemporaries did, and why that was, and why sometimes they were falsely judged for being hackier or more broad, even though they were just as, if not more prolific sometimes than their peers. And it was in talking about our sort of appreciation of women like that who came before us that we talked about, you know, wouldn't it be interesting to explore a show where there's a young comic or a young comedy writer who starts to appreciate the place in history that someone like Jean Smart's character on our show, Deborah Vance, played in the history of comedy?
Yes. And I gather you very early on think of Jean Smart.
You know, Jean absolutely loves when we say this, and because it's true, when we thought of it 6 years ago, she was too young. She was far too young for the role. So, you know, we didn't have anyone specific in mind. She was just such a vivid character for us because she really is an amalgamation of so many, both women in comedy, but also women in show business in general. I mean, there's a lot of Debbie Reynolds in her and Lucille Ball. And, you know, we just had this image of Deborah Vance, and it was only when we got to talking about actually making the show that we said, you know, we want to make something really grounded and very real. And we really want there to be these poignant and more heartfelt moments in the show. So we need someone who can both be believably a stand-up comedian, but also, you know, play those more dramatic moments well. And somebody who can both be a believable stand-up and a really talented dramatic actor who happens to be in her late 60s, it's not the longest list in the world. And for us, Jean really was always at the top of it. And it's so funny that we've gotten to see her stretch in that way recently so much. So, you know, when we did share the script with her, it just so happened that she, as a child, wanted to be a stand-up comedian. So it was really kismet. It was really bizarre. But once we got her, we were like, oh, now there's nothing we can't write because she can do anything.
Did you get her before you started pitching it, or pitch first, get her later?
We pitched first, the show was bought, and we were writing the pilot, and then we attached Jean. We wanted to have a pilot that she could read or to attach to, basically. So we did that.
Now, I don't know if you pitched a ton of places or not so many.
We pitched to a handful. I mean, I would say a bunch of places, yeah.
Yeah, we pitched to a good amount of places. I mean, what's interesting is, like, it's a lesson in how fast the TV landscape is changing, in that, like, when we pitched to HBO Max, like, they didn't even have a name at the time, and they didn't even have, like, a building. Like, they were, like, moving into their office, and there were boxes everywhere. And same thing with, you know, Peacock didn't exist. Like, that, like, right towards the end, we had already pitched, and it was kind of like, oh, Universal might do a streaming service, maybe there, but we had been lucky enough that places had already bought it. But, and, in, you know, that was only 2 years ago. And so, you know, now we, there would be like three or four more places to pitch.
Yeah, I was wondering, actually, because I have to imagine, just being honest with the building not being a thing and a lot of people being kind of nasty about HBO Max at that point, you know, were you thinking, oh, okay, they bought it, we'll do it there?
You know, there were several offers on the show. And what was interesting was HBO Max was one of the places that seemed most enthusiastic. And Susanna Makos, who's our creative executive on the show, bought it in the room. We hadn't even really fully finished the pitch. And she was like, I absolutely understand. I know this woman. Have you read Debbie Reynolds' autobiography? Have you read Lauren Bacall's autobiography? You need to. And she really had an understanding of the show very quickly that made us feel like it was really in good hands at HBO Max.
It was cool to have a few places want it, but it is that thing of like, sometimes you can get in your head, oh, I'd love this to be at Netflix, you know, like, that you put a premium on certain places or whatever. But like the truth is like, it's all about the how passionate the person hearing your pitch is about your idea. Like if they don't love it and get it, they're not going to be an advocate for it. And so like Paul said, like Susanna Makos from day one in that room was like, she got this idea. She got what the show could be. We just felt like, okay, this person absolutely gets it and is going to be an advocate for this show. When you're pitching something, that's the thing you have to look for and hopefully get.
Coming up after a short break, Jen Statsky and Paul W. Downs talk about what happened when Hack star Gene Smart suffered a devastating loss with a week of shooting left. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Join Jacqueline Coley as she hosts a brand new podcast, Scene on Screen. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that define them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Scene on Screen is available now, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to Paul W. Downs and Jen Statsky, two of the three creators of the HBO Max series Hacks. Along with Lucia Aniello, Downs and Statsky are Emmy nominated for Outstanding Comedy Series and Outstanding Comedy Writing. Gene Smart plays Deborah Vance, a comedy legend in Vegas who has spent years building her career. She lives in luxury, but her relationships are strained if they exist at all. Facing the loss of her long-running casino residency, she reluctantly agrees to hire Ava, a smart but shallow writer in her 20s who's recently been canceled over an ill-advised tweet. The idea is that Ava will freshen up Deborah's material. At their first meeting at Deborah's palatial estate, they get along swimmingly.
By the way, so cool they let you move into a cheesecake factory.
Oh, is that where you wait tables? That seems like a better fit.
Oh, yeah, I agree, you classist monster. I'd rather slang bang bang chicken and shrimp all day than work here. I mean, what is this, 50 tassels on one couch? Even Liberace would think it's a bit much.
Oh, no, you're incorrect. He actually loved it. He did poppers on that couch in 85.
Not surprisingly, the Hacks creators thought of Gene Smart for Deborah instantly. But Paul W. Downs says they saw more than 400 women for the role of the younger comic. And then?
Hannah Einbinder came in and really was the part. You know, she was 24-year-old emerging comedian and really had a vulnerability and a sweetness beneath that hardened surface that we really were going for and really hoped to find. Because, you know, we wrote the character with a place to go, and we really wanted her to grow and evolve over the course of the series. And so in order to start with a character that is flawed, you also really want to root for them and find them winning. And there was something about Hannah and her performance that really made us empathize, even in the face of her being sometimes entitled and sometimes harsh and sometimes bratty. You know, we really could see beneath that, that there was a reason for it because Hannah's natural vulnerability came through and we really hadn't seen that before.
Yeah. I mean, she's Lorraine Newman's daughter. So I think I probably assumed, oh yeah, it's some kind of old boy, girl, comedy network got her in there, but which is a really stupid thing to say now that I'm thinking about it, because it's such a specific requirement for the role, you know, to be able to do all the things that Paul just said.
Yeah. It's funny when people, and like nepotism that certainly exists in Hollywood, but it is funny when sometimes people have an assumption like that, because I always think like, well, we'd really be shooting ourselves in the foot, because this show lives or dies by the chemistry between Jean Smart and whoever this young actor is. And it would be, I mean, I guess it would be a situation where we'd be like forced into it, but like it would do us no good to give in to the pull of Hollywood nepotism, because the show would probably be terrible if it wasn't the right person opposite Jean.
And also, you know, truth be told, we had never seen Hannah before, and we didn't even know it really until around the screen test is when we were honestly doing a background check, which just means Googling more heavily the women who were coming into screen tests, that we were like, oh my gosh, we had no idea that she was Lorraine Newman's daughter until we were fully into the process.
Wow. You know, the sad thing about the first season, of course, was that Jean Smart's husband passed away with a week left to shoot. And I mean, what did you do when you were facing that?
You know, I mean, I want to be sensitive to it because it's something that happened to Jean. And so I don't want to speak about it in a way that, I don't know, wouldn't be respectful of that. But it was, what I'll say is that it was incredibly challenging and difficult, obviously, for Jean. And she is just an incredible professional and talent and human being, that she was able to get through the show and finish it. And she, as I cannot even fathom what she was dealing with, but she was really adamant that she wanted to finish, because I think the show was incredibly, or is incredibly important to her. And she's just such a strong person and leader that she did it. But yeah, it was a really challenging, difficult time for her, of course.
I mean, I don't want to pry into, you know, Jean's thing, but as showrunners, do you have to say, you know, we can stop, we can take a break, or?
Oh, yes. We assumed we would not be. We were like, okay, well, we'll probably come back in 6 months. Maybe we'll pick it up next year. We really thought that we would be taking a break, but it was really Jean that said, no, this is important to me and I want to finish this show. And Jean really is, she is the number one, and we really took our cue from her. And she, and it was true really, obviously in that difficult time, but really any time that there was something we were like, you know, this is a little bit tricky, this moment, we can adjust something here. And she'd be like, no way, I want to do that. I mean, the woman wanted to do all her own stunts. She wanted to jump on the helicopter. So there, yeah. We knew from working with her that she is all in, she is fully committed. And so in that way, we kind of looked to her in this time as well.
And just to be clear, the last thing is the funeral sequence that she has to shoot. And is that right?
Yes. Wow. That was incredibly difficult and just really unfortunate.
Wow. What are the odds? And,
yeah. What are the odds, truly? And so, yeah, like Paul said, we never expected her to be back on set doing that in a matter of like a week and some days. Like, you know, we really did. We were like, 6 months, a year, who knows when a tragedy like this happens, who knows when someone will be ready to go back. But she deserves every possible ounce of credit, because it was just a really remarkable thing to witness.
Yeah. So season two, do we have a time when we can look forward to seeing it? Because I'm ready right now.
Next year. I think we can safely say next year, right, Paul?
Yeah, we're trying to be annual. But yes, God willing, all things going well. And, you know, if the world doesn't completely shut down again, yes, next year. And we are well on our way into the creative of season two right now.
Paul W. Downs and Jen Statsky are two of the creators of Hacks on HBO Max. Thank you guys so much for coming virtually in.
Thank you for having
Thanks
us.
And for
thank you for watching
us.
The show. We really do appreciate it.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's show with help this week from John Meek and Paul Smith, who also mixed the show. You can stream The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts on the KCRW app. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.